Hello and welcome, everyone. Today is Friday, March 26th. We have two great speakers speaking today from ACA. We have Jim Davis, who's a fairly new member, and we have Kathy Dollard, who's been a member. Kathy, when did you join?
I don't remember. Five years ago, maybe?
I think so, yeah. So it's been a few years. That's good. Kathy's a former member of Garrett, so I'm sure she'll address that, and if anyone has questions at the end, they can ask. Jim, would you like to start?
Oh, sure. Thanks, Amy. As Amy said, I am a newer member. I came through the training within the last couple of years. I joined ACA the summer of 07, went through the virtual classroom training that fall, and ended up with the week intensive training in Denver January of 08. So a couple years into this, and what I wanted to share with you is how I found out about ACA, why I joined, and why I think it's a great value. Speaking of the training, I was very impressed with how in-depth and how prepared I was once I came through the training. I know Kathy will speak to this, but I talked to another former Garrett planner who is in ACA, and he mentioned how much more robust the ACA training was compared to Garrett and how much more prepared he was to be a successful business owner. What I like to tell people is I am not the smartest person, but I am smart enough to know what I don't know. So I couldn't imagine starting up a financial planning practice, you know, without the support and structure of ACA or a system like that. It gives you the structure to build and sustain a successful practice. There's no question about that. I became an advisor, I found out about ACA because my wife and I became clients of an ACA planner here in town back in, I think it was 2002, and we were very impressed with how he worked with us, how he advised us. It just made perfect sense to us. And I had always had an interest in personal finance, so I was really interested in how he worked with us. It just made total sense to me. And at the time, I was doing something that I did not like, and I was just kind of fed up with it. It was pretty monotonous work. It wasn't very fulfilling. So we had been clients of Rob's for maybe 2 or 3 years, and I just kind of got to the point where, you know, I said, enough, I got to do something else. So I just happened to be meeting with him one day, and I told him that I got to do something else, and he asked me what I wanted to do, and I said, Rob, I want to do what you do. And so we kind of set the agenda of what we had that day to the side, and we kind of got a game plan together of how I could transition from what I was doing into the financial planning arena. So I went back to Ohio State and took all the CFP courses and took the CFP exam back in 2007. And Rob had also given me a book by Burt Whitehead, the gentleman that started the Cambridge Alliance way back when. It's called Why Smart People Do Stupid Things with Money, Overcoming Financial Dysfunction. And I read through that 2 or 3 times, and it just really clicked. It made total sense to me, and I thought, this is perfect. There's a lot of people out there that need this advice. So after I had taken the CFP exam in spring of 07, somehow passed it, I'm not sure how, that summer I'm, you know, getting ready to get geared up to get my own practice going, and I'm doing my due diligence of investigating ACA further and kind of exploring my options. And I was out to lunch with Rob one day, and we're talking, and I said, you know, this seems great, the system seems great, the people I've talked to seem great, but, you know, I said, Rob, this is, quite frankly, it's a hell of a lot of money to join this. And what he said to me, and I've repeated this many times, and it just, I'll never forget it, and he said, what you have to understand is when you join ACA, it's you're buying a business in a box. And what he means by that is all the resources are there for you to learn how to advise clients, how to set up an office, how to attract clients, and how to run a successful practice. He was a career changer as well. He's a former university professor, so he knows, you know, where I'm coming from as a career changer. So it just made perfect sense to me. And I would assume that most folks on the call are totally sold on the aspect that the financial planning field, the present and the future, is the fee only. The commission side is slowly dying out. But what I would like to do is maybe take this a step further, because there are a lot of fee-only folks that just do assets under management. They don't do the comprehensive planning that we do. And that's fine, and there's a lot of great folks out there that do the money management, and that's fine. But what we find is the value that we provide our clients doing the comprehensive planning, they get the value, and they're willing to pay for it. So you get paid what you're worth with you helping them with their taxes and their cash flow and their retirement planning and investments. You get paid for what you're worth. They see the value in it, and that makes them want to renew your services year in and year out. So you help to build a self-sustaining practice, because once you get clients under your belt, 9.5 times out of 10, they're going to renew your services the next year, and the year after that. We had, this has probably been about a year ago, we took on a couple as clients, and they had been working with another advisor here in town who just did the AUM model, just managed their money for them, and she's good at what she does, and they didn't have any problems with that. But what happened is they would present issues to her that she couldn't help them with, that he is semi-retired and has a side business and wanted to know if he should start taking Social Security and start doing some more in-depth retirement planning, and she wasn't equipped to help him. And that's what kind of made him search out and find us. And like I said, we've been working with him for a year, and he's just amazed that we can offer this comprehensive or holistic approach to his finances, where he's not going to have, he doesn't have to go here to get estate planning advice. He doesn't go across town to get his taxes done or go over to his insurance agent to get advice on his insurance policies. He really appreciates and understands the value of this comprehensive approach. The next point I would like to focus on, and one of the big reasons why I joined ACA and why I'll be a member forever, is the community aspect. The folks in this organization are top-notch, wonderful people. You're not out there on your own. You're going to get to know other folks in the Alliance, and I know Amy will know better than I am, but I think there's maybe 140 to 150 members across the country, and you'll get to know these folks very well, and they're there to help you. You know, especially just first starting out, there's things that are going to come up that you're going to need help on, and you're going to find these people to be the backbone, the support that you need to get you over the hump. The first ACA update conference I went to a couple of years ago, they had a little reception for first-time attendees, and there was a gentleman that got up and made the point that he's been in the Alliance for 10, 12 years, probably longer than that, and has a very successful practice. And what he said was, you know, part of what you're paying this fee for is the access to this collective mindset, that when he first started out, he said he got to know three or four other folks in the Alliance, and he literally had them on speed dial, that if something came up, he was on the horn with them, and they were happy to help. And now he's kind of in that position where, you know, folks are calling him because he's been there and done that and is very successful. So it's kind of, you know, what comes around goes around. I know it does sound a little corny and a little cheesy maybe, but it's the people in this organization are really top-notch, and it's the reason, a big reason why I joined, and like I said, a huge reason why I will stay. And you'll get to know, there's folks in this Alliance that have different backgrounds, folks that are CPAs, folks that were in the insurance industry at one time, folks that are attorneys and have a good background on estate planning, and folks that are good with stock options. So you'll get to know these folks, and you can search them out and pick their brains when and if things come up. And the next point I would like to make about the ACA system, and I know Kathy can expand on this, is that this model lends itself to build a sustained practice where you are charging your clients on an annual retainer basis, and they're going to see the value of it, and you're going to do a good job for them, and they're going to renew your services. I say 9.5 times out of 10. I think that's kind of the standard Cambridge or ACA ratio of clients that renew every year, right around 95%. So once you, these first couple of years, you're building up a practice, you're getting clients under your belt, you know, most likely you'll have them 5, 10, 15 years down the road. And these folks will eventually refer other clients, and, you know, before you know it, you've built up a practice, and you'll have more work than you'll be able to deal with. And what I would also say that this model also lends itself to a lot of flexibility. There's some folks that come in and say, hey, I want to be a one-man shop and do, you know, keep it relatively small, keep it relatively simple, you know, maybe at some point have an admin person or a paraplanner. But, you know, some folks will come in and say, hey, I want to have a huge practice where I want to have 3 or 4 planners and a support staff. And that's great. There's the flexibility there for you to design your practice if you want to go on a small practice track or maybe a larger practice track. So what I would say that this type of model lends itself to building a long-lasting, sustaining practice. It's not something where, you know, you're doing a lot of project work with someone for a couple hours, you handle a couple of their issues, they're out the door, you never see them again, and you're constantly having to beat the bush to get new clients. So what I would say for me that this ACA system, it's everything it was advertised to be. I think it's a great time to start a practice because, quite frankly, there are a lot of folks out there in this market. There's an underserved market, this middle-income to upper-middle-income clientele. A lot of folks out there that have been doing things on their own with the economy and the stock market over the last couple of years. A lot of these do-it-yourselfers are saying, hey, we need some help. We need to go see some folks. So what I would say to you is that this system gives you the resources to be a successful advisor and to run a successful practice. What I'm not saying is, you know, you join the system and, you know, your phone's going to start ringing off the hook with clients. I'm not saying that. You know, you'll have to do the work to go out and get that 12 to 15 clients to start your practice, and eventually those will give you referrals and on down the road, but they will teach you how to get the clients, how to do the marketing, and how to be a successful planner. Amy?
Thank you, Jim. That was great. Okay, next up we have Kathy Dollard. Kathy?
Yep, I'm here. Okay, well, I like to call myself the accidental entrepreneur. This is my third career. My first career was with corporate Honeywell. My second career, I was lucky enough to be able to stay home full-time with my kids for about 10 years. And during that period, I decided that I wanted to become a financial planner. And I really had no idea what financial planners did. I thought I did, but it turned out that I really didn't, at least what people actually did. So anyway, I got my CFP. And I got my first part-time job, and I worked for a guy who called himself a financial planner, but he didn't really do financial planning. He just did investments. But I thought, what the heck? You know, he's paying me, and I'm learning how to run a business. So then from there, I went and worked for another guy who called himself a financial planner, and lo and behold, I found out that he really wasn't doing financial planning either. He was doing investment management and selling some annuities and selling some life insurance and that kind of thing. So I got all of my licenses under him and still was very disappointed because I still wasn't doing financial planning. So I realized that, you know, if there was any way that I was actually going to be doing, and this was actually before I really realized what fee-only meant and all that kind of stuff. I just knew that I wasn't doing financial planning. So I worked for those guys for a total of about 3 years and then decided that I was going to go off on my own and do financial planning. Well, I struggled for about a year trying to be everything to everybody, investment management, financial planning, selling long-term care insurance, doing college planning, selling life insurance and disability insurance. And no wonder I wasn't doing too well because I really didn't know who I was and who my target client was. So I have to say around this time I heard about Cheryl Garrett and I thought, wow, that sounds like somebody who's doing financial planning and I'd like to find out how to do that. So I actually joined Garrett, and at the same time I actually was looking at the Alliance of, well, we were called the Alliance of Cambridge Advisors back then. And at the time Cheryl was just starting out with the Garrett Planning Network and the fee was about one-third of the ACA fee, and not having a lot of money to throw around, that was one thing in Garrett's favor. And the second was that I talked to Bert Whitehead, and taxes just sounded like you really had to be a tax person to join Cambridge, and that really scared me because I did my family's taxes, but I really wasn't interested in doing other people's. So I ended up joining Garrett, and I have to say it's a wonderful organization. I had a wonderful time, great people, every bit as supportive as Cambridge people are. But I took to heart the hourly model. Actually, mostly I did projects where I would estimate my time and then bill for it, and I was terrible at estimating. I always underestimated the hours, and of course then I wouldn't bill for the extra hours. So I was very, 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 very busy. But barely breaking even. And after about 5 or 6 years of that, I thought, I just can't keep doing this. There's got to be a better way. So at that point, I decided to look into Cambridge. And it seemed like things had changed a little bit. Taxes were still important, but you didn't have to do tax prep. And, of course, the funny thing is that once I started doing tax prep, I absolutely loved it, and my husband and I just became enrolled agents, so you never know. But, you know, I would say basically there's two reasons I joined Cambridge. The first was, to be blunt, it was money. I needed to make some money. I was working so hard, I just needed to make what I considered to be a reasonable living, and I just was not able to do it on the hourly project model. I have to say that I don't know what the fee is now, but to join Cambridge, probably a little bit more than what it was when I joined. But my first two retainers, the first one was about $7,000 and the next one was $8,500. And I got those two within two months of each other and completely paid for the cost of joining Cambridge that first year and some. So, you know, I'm thrilled to say that I'm finally really not only enjoying what I'm doing, but actually making what I consider to be a pretty decent income. So what more? One of the things that really attracted me to Cambridge, of course, besides the possibility of making a living income, was the whole system. I read Bert's book, Why Smart People Do Stupid Things with Money. I loved the idea of joining an organization that not only had a structure and a philosophy, but that structure and philosophy fit together. So this is how we do financial planning. This is what we think about financial planning in terms of the asset allocation, the functional asset allocation. And this is how you run the meetings that you should be having. That really, really appealed to me. And I have to say that the training program that Cambridge has is phenomenal. It is very in-depth and will guide you all along the way. So now that I've been here about 5 years, why do I stay? Oh, and by the way, just to back up a minute, if you haven't read the book, Why Smart People Do Stupid Things with Money, you really do need to read it, because if that book resonates with you, then you know you're on the right track, and if it doesn't, then you know you're probably on the wrong track. So I highly recommend reading that if you haven't done so yet. And now 5 years later, why do I stay? Well, because I love the model and I love the people, and I look forward to going to our annual update conferences and seeing who's doing what, learning about how other people are solving the same kinds of problems that I have. I probably post questions on the ACA internet. I either post a question or answer somebody else's question several times a week. And it's just amazing how supportive people are. We ended up, my husband and I, he helps me with taxes. We ended up doing some pretty complicated amended tax returns, and three people from Cambridge helped us get through all that by talking to us and lending us their expertise and their experience. Like Jim said, the people are very generous, and that's probably the main reason why I stay now, is just the benefit that I get from being part of the group. And the other thing I wanted to mention is that I think maybe to some extent people might be concerned about going off on their own with the economy the way it's been. But I have to say that 2009 was my best year, and that was the year, actually the end of 2008 and 2009 put me over the top. I'm at the point where I have to figure out how I'm going to handle all the clients that I have. And if I'd want to take on more, how is that going to change my business model? But I know that there are people in Cambridge who can help me make that transition. So I think that's probably about all I have to say, Amy.
Thank you, Kathy. That was great.
Sure.
Okay, we'll open this up to Q&A now. If anybody has any questions, don't forget to hit star 6 to unmute yourself before you start talking. Does anyone have any questions? I know there's a few out there.
This is Dick Gold, and I have a question.
Go for it.
I understand that the fee structure that is recommended includes not necessarily what I think of as investable assets, such as your home, if you have artwork, et cetera. Could you describe that model and why you recommended that people do it that way?
Well, this is Kathy. Let me. Can you try to clarify your question a little more? Are you asking about the retainer calculator?
Yes.
Okay. Well, basically, the retainer calculator is. I tell my clients that their fee is going to be based on how complicated their situation is, and as a proxy for the complexity of their situation, we're going to take into account their earned income, their investment income, their investments, and whether or not I do their taxes and how complex their tax situation is. So the retainer calculator takes all of that into account. Does that answer your question?
Well, and just, we work with people not just with their investable assets, not just with their IRAs and their 401ks. We do a holistic approach, and we look at their whole net worth, and their real estate is a big part of that. Helping them if they have to refi their mortgage, or is it time to buy a new house? There's a lot of issues that pop up with their non-investable assets, their real estate, which is a big component of how we advise folks, and that's why that's accounted for in the calculator.
Okay, and do you experience any objections to that approach?
No, because I think we do a good job throughout the preliminary appointment of explaining who we are and how we work and how we advise folks in all areas of their finances. So it all kind of clicks in, and we really haven't had much pushback.
Good.
Well, I have to be honest. I'm outside of Boston, and back when housing prices were going through the roof, it was tough. It was tough. Somebody would have a $700,000 house and, you know, $100,000 in investments, and it would be tough to include real estate in the calculator. And I often didn't. And it doesn't. And then I would discover that, you know what, it didn't really make that. That's an extreme example, but in general, it didn't really make that much difference in the fee.
Well. Also, you know, on a related matter, I'm one of those people that also read the book. And the book makes a strong statement about the importance of real estate. And it argues that for many people, it's the most important investment they'll ever make.
Mm-hmm.
And it also argues that it's a hedge against inflation.
Right.
And given what's happened to homes in the last few years, I'm really wondering whether those arguments are holding up with your clients.
Well, you know, it's a long-term approach. You know, yeah, over the last few years, it hasn't been pretty. But, you know, if you look over 10, 20, 30 years, it'll hold up. You know, it's just like the markets, the stock market over the last couple of years. You know, the 2008 was brutal, but it's come back, and it will continue to come back. If you're taking a snapshot in time, yeah, it looks pretty brutal. But going out 20, 30, 40 years, you know, everything will even out.
Plus, I think that if we could have only talked to all those people who bought houses that were way too expensive for them, that were more highly leveraged than they should ever have been, I mean, that was not the Cambridge model would have really helped them. So I think our model is right, and that, you know, everything else was wrong when real estate was going sky high. People were taking on a lot more risk than they realized, and if we had been able to counsel people who were doing that, they might not have taken on that much risk.
Thank you.
Kathy, this is Al Davis. I had two questions for you, if you don't mind. The first is, you had mentioned the first two clients that you got when you came to ACA were 7,000 and 8.5 retainer.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you could sort of describe their financial profile in general, and why they came to you in the first place. And then second, if you could just touch on, since you've been Garrett and ACA, compare and contrast the training programs and the training that you got in both of those programs.
Okay, I'll do my best. I probably can only hold one thought in my mind at a time, so you might have to remind me about part two.
Sure.
Let's see, those first two clients. Ah, boy. Okay, well, the first one, a couple, both professionals working in the high-tech industry, in their late 30s, early 40s, second marriage for one of them, I think, two little girls. I had had the opportunity at one time to do a money makeover in the Boston Globe. And it was published in August of that year. And they happened to read it. And they were having tax problems. They were getting whipsawed. Every year they either got a $10,000 refund or they owed $10,000 and had to pay penalties. And it was driving them nuts. And that's why they came to me. And in fact, this money makeover, I thought, was going to be the ruin of me, because I worked with this very flaky couple who had terrible budgeting and cash flow problems. And I thought, you know, people are going to think that I can't help anybody because I wasn't able to help this particular couple that had the budget problems. And the way it came across was that when I asked the prospects why they, you know, contacted me, they said, well, we figured if you could help that couple, you could help anybody. So... probably what really raised the fee that high for them was their income, being a dual-income couple. And I still have them. They're one of my favorite client couples. And they do have tax issues. Every year something comes up. The first year her company got bought out, and she had all these accelerated stock options that vested. The next year the same thing happened to his company. The next year they had kind of a medium year, and the year after she got laid off and was out of work for a while and started with a new company. So every year something happens to them. So that sort of brings up why people come to Cambridge. is that, and one of the distinctions that I've seen between Cambridge and Garrett is that with Cambridge, people are going to be paying a pretty decent fee, but they have pain. And if you can solve and take care of their pain, they are just so relieved that they're willing to pay. On the other hand, with Garrett, if you're not to pick on Garrett, but if you're doing an hourly or some kind of a project, probably the fee is not going to be as big as a retainer fee. And I had a lot of people coming to me who just kind of sort of wanted to know if they were okay. So they didn't really have any pain. So I sort of see the demographics of my Garrett client, old Garrett clients, as very similar to the demographics of my ACA clients. It's just the pain factor is different. With the other couple, very similar. They were both employed full-time, although he was dying to get out of the high-tech industry. He wanted to retire early. And they had tax problems, too. They hadn't filed their returns in about 3 years. So maybe that's how I really got into liking taxes.
Now, you mentioned the couple who, or the idea that those people with pain really benefit from Cambridge.
Yeah.
But is there a way, in your opinion, to build the model for at least some percentage of your practice for those people who may not have a huge amount of pain but could be great clients and really benefit from the holistic planning approach?
I think they have to have some pain at some level.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One of the things that I found is that, you know, when you first go into business, at least when I was with Garrett, I took everybody because I needed everybody and to make a living or to barely make a living. And with the Cambridge model, after a while you realize I don't need to take everybody because if my retainer is going to be three times what a project fee is going to be, I only need to take a third as many clients on. And you can develop more of a long-term relationship with people so that you're there when the unexpected happens. So I think maybe when you're building your practice, you know, you can design it so that, and I know a lot of people in Cambridge do project work, but eventually you might get to the point where you find that it's not as efficient or effective use of your time as to be doing the retainer work.
And then my second question to remind you was, since mm-hmm. you've gone through both the Garrett and Cambridge training programs, can you talk a little bit about the similarities and differences between the two?
Yeah, I'll try, but it's been so long for either one that I'm probably not current on either one. I did Garrett 10 years ago, so I wouldn't be surprised if it hadn't changed some. As I recall, it was maybe a 2 or 3 day on-site training program, and you did get a big box, you know, with some binders and stuff like that. One of the things that impressed me at the time was that we went through different kinds of software, and Cheryl was using MoneyTree software at the time, and I was sort of in a dilemma about what kind of software to use. So I was happy that we got some training in financial planning software. You know, the Cambridge way is really to not use software, but more to use our spreadsheet tools. And I have to say that since, you know, over the last 10 years, I'm really pretty much evolved almost 100% out of using financial planning software because I think it sort of, clients don't really understand what it's telling them, and it puts a barrier between you and the client to focus on the software. And the Cambridge training has changed too since I joined. It's pretty much been totally revised. So I'm not a good person to talk about that, I guess.
Great, that was helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, maybe Jim can talk more about the training.
Yeah, the training I thought was, and again, I don't have anything to compare it to, but I thought it was great. I felt prepared when I came through training to be a business owner and to be a financial planner. And they're always going back through and revising and revamping the training materials. And what I enjoyed about it, I think there were six people in my training class, and so we got to know each other doing the virtual classroom calls for several months. And by the time we got to Denver to do the week intensive training, we all kind of knew each other and we got along very well. And as a matter of fact, we do a once every 2 month conference call with my classmates just to, you know, to catch up and see where we're at and compare stories. So I thought it was great.
Yeah, one of the things about the training is that they did revamp it and improve it. And it's been online, so I found that even though I went through training, 5 years ago, that last year, I went back and printed out all of the new training materials and went through them, and it was great. I mean, it was like going through training all over again and only saying, well, now I know why you do this, and oh, I forgot about that. And I incorporated a lot of the new training techniques into how I ran my meetings.
And just one more thing, kind of parallel to this, you know, this isn't something where you sign up and they're going to send you a box of stuff and they say, okay, you know, good luck, you know, call us if you need us. You know, you're going to be assigned a coach and a mentor right from the get-go that's going to kind of walk you through things. Here's what you need to be working on. Here's what you need to do. And maybe at times kind of hold your feet to the fire where maybe you're not out doing the marketing that you need to do, and there's someone there to say, hey, you know, it's, you know, you need to work on building your practice and getting out there and doing these kinds of things. So I thought that was important too. When my material showed up in the mail, and that same afternoon my coach was on the phone with me, and we worked 3 or 4 months together while I was in training and making sure that I had all the things I needed to do, all the paperwork, all the admin stuff, getting an office set up. So when I came out of training, literally the day I got back, I was raring to go. You know, just all the stuff, you know, filling out an ADV and working on the membership requirements for NAPFA and, you know, just all the nitpicky stuff that's not fun to do, but you need to get it done. You know, she made sure that through these coaching calls that I was raring to go and I had all my bases covered.
Yeah, I had a similar experience, a little differently, because I had a practice in place when I joined Cambridge, but I was, you know, very, very busy working with my hourly and project clients, and I just couldn't find the time to even think about how I was going to get that first retainer client. And so I asked Cambridge for a coach, specifically somebody who had changed their practice from an hourly practice to a Cambridge-type practice. And I got a really great coach who really held my feet to the fire, and I ended up working over New Year's weekend to get my act in place and write a letter to all of my existing clients talking about the changes in my business and making an offer to them and all that kind of thing. And my coach, you know, really helped me by sharing what he had done and also holding my feet to the fire to get it done. He really was very instrumental, because I had been a member for almost probably 8 months before I was really able to get my act together enough, but it was really definitely due to the coach that I was able to do that. Because once you're busy with one style, it can be difficult to switch gears.
Any more questions?
Yes, this is Mary Carol in Baltimore. Could both of you kind of walk through the progression of where you started in your businesses in terms where you single entrepreneurs, one-person shop, or did you have partnerships, and how did it progress? And if you were doing it again in today's atmosphere, what would you do differently, if anything?
I don't know that I would change. I came out of training a couple of years ago, and I was just I was within 2 weeks of maybe more like a month of coming back from the in-depth training, I was approached by another ACA planner here in town. I'm in Columbus, Ohio, and there's, I don't know, maybe a half a dozen of us here in the central Ohio area. And I was approached by her about actually partnering up with her because she was someone in her early 60s and still like doing the financial planning, but she knew that, you know, at some point she'll want to back out of this and she wanted to have some succession planning in place. So I ended up partnering up with another planner here in town. It's the two of us, and we have a gentleman that does some admin work for us, some administrative work, maybe 30 hours a week type of thing. And the idea is that I'm slowly buying out her practice over, well, it's our practice, but buying out the practice over a 10-year period. And then probably maybe we're into our third year of this, probably year six or seven, we'll bring on another partner and groom this person over a 2 or 3 year period and just keep this practice evolving and going for ever and always, hopefully. And it's worked out really well. I've very lucky and very fortunate, and it's worked out great for me.
Great. And Kathleen?
I'm a sole proprietor, and I have been since the very beginning, and I like it that way. I guess, I'm kind of stubborn, and I like doing things my own way. I think at some point I'll probably have to evolve to having at least a virtual assistant of some sort. I mean, my husband does help me with the taxes, and he tells me I'm a terrible boss. I'll have to learn how to do that kind of thing, delegate better. Basically I want to keep my practice small, manageable. There are people within Cambridge who have much larger practices, and we actually do have a pretty well-defined practice tracks for, people who want to keep their who want small businesses versus those who want large businesses, small typically being, just an advisor and maybe an assistant or a virtual assistant to people who want to have multiple planners in their office. And we do try to design the training and the conferences around those tracks so that we help people, wherever they are and wherever they do need help. But that's me. I wouldn't want to be any different.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Any more questions? We still have about 15 minutes.
I had another question regarding tax preparation. I'm certainly comfortable with and know that tax planning is a huge part of the financial planning process. But I haven't been aware of a lot of financial planners in my area doing the actual tax preparation, especially for complicated tax situations like you were talking about, Kathy. Mm. And I was wondering how your clients have taken to that when you describe the process and that you can help them not only with their tax planning but also the preparation. And, were they okay with cutting ties with their CPA?
I offer tax prep as a add-on. It's optional. So I give clients two quotes, one without tax prep and one with tax prep. And I tell people that the really important thing is the tax planning. And if they're happy with their current tax preparer, that's fine with me. But, if maybe they're not, or maybe they're just tired of doing their own taxes. Or one of the things that you do when you meet with a client, not in the first meeting, but in the second meeting, is you look, as you're developing the retainer quote, you're looking for ways to save them money. And a lot of times the way you can save them money is by looking at their last three tax returns. And you find that, their tax preparer or they themselves missed things along the way. They just missed getting that education deduction because their AGI was just a little bit too high, and if they'd only contributed to an IRA that year, they could have gotten the deduction too.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing. So I don't try to force anybody to have me do their taxes. It's really up to them. But I would have to say that once you do somebody's taxes, they are much stickier as a client. In fact, I had people this past year that they're probably paying about $4,000 a year for their retainer, and it includes tax prep. And this past year, they said, well, you know, we've sort of gotten things straightened out, and this is kind of expensive, and we're not sure we really want to renew. Can you just do our taxes and not do the retainer? And I said, no. If you want me to do your taxes, you have to stay with the retainer. And they did. And I think they're glad they did, because a lot of insurance issues came up after that they didn't really anticipate having as problems. So I don't know. I think, you know, if you can do the taxes, it's great. If you don't want to, that's fine. Do the tax planning, but you might find out that you really like doing taxes, and it really does make the whole process come full circle.
And I would. What percentage? I'm sorry, Jim. What percentage of clients would you say you do tax preparation for?
Probably it's up to about 60% of them.
Okay.
We do tax prep for most of our clients. There's maybe a handful, two or three, that we don't do it for. And we tell them, you know, if we get pushback, they say, oh, I've used a CPA for years and years. And if they still want to do it, that's fine. It's not a huge deal for us. But what Kathy pointed out, you know, the real meat of this is doing the tax planning throughout the year. You know, once you get to the tax prep, you know, everything's kind of cooked, and it's just getting the right numbers on the right lines. But I would agree with Kathy also, doing their tax prep makes them a little more, I think Kathy used the term sticky, as them wanting to renew with you. You know, you can almost see the sense of relief when someone, this time of year when they drop off their tax stuff. It's just kind of like, here it is, you know what to do with it, it's out of my hair, and you can almost see the weight lifted off their backs that, you know, it's one less thing I have to worry about. And that's really what I've noticed over the last couple of years with folks. And I had the, I don't know if you call it fear, but just kind of the apprehension of, oh, do I want to do tax prep? Am I qualified for it? It's not as hard as I thought it would be. And you get to know the clients a lot more in depth and just doing this extra piece of the puzzle.
Anyone else? Any questions? Tax questions, practice setup questions.
Hi, Amy?
Yes?
This is Daryl. I'm sorry, you guys. I guess I was muted. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, hi. I have a question for Jim. Jim, you recently are changing careers. I was wondering if there was anything that you thought personally was your biggest hurdle to get over, and then what ACA did to help you get over that.
Well, my biggest thing was figuring out how to transition. And I don't know if I mentioned it in my little opening spiel, but, you know, I talked to my ACA planner about how I should do this. And we sat down, and he said, you know, here's the things that you want to get done and get out of the way. And the biggest thing was doing the CFP studies, because that did take a chunk of time. It took me probably a year and a half to do the coursework and another 4 to 6 months to study for the big exam. So, you know, that was a two-year commitment. And just having that time also to build up some cash reserves that, you know, you're going to need some money to, you're starting a business. You're going to need some money for that, and you're not sure exactly how things are going to go that first year or two. So you need a little bit of a cash cushion. So that was the biggest thing for me, is getting through the schoolwork, the CFP stuff, and getting some cash reserves there to get me through the first year or two.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. And I, for whatever reason, Cambridge or ACA tends to attract career changers. And I think it's because of this, what I alluded to in my, again, my opening spiel about this being a business in a box where all the resources are there for you, where, you know, whatever background you're coming from. You know, if you're already a financial planner, that's great. You already have a base knowledge. But if you're someone coming from a totally unrelated field like I was, it was the perfect system for me.
Right. That fits my situation.
Gotcha. And before I forget, if anyone wants to shoot me an email and you want to set up time to talk just one-on-one, my email is jim@partnershipfinancial.com, and I'd be more than happy to talk anytime.
And this is Kathy. I'd be happy to do so as well. And my email is Kathy with a K at neshobafinancialplanning.com. Neshoba is N as in Nancy, A-S-H-O-B as in boy, A. Neshoba Financial Planning.
Any more questions from anyone? Okay, I think it's a wrap. I want to thank Jim and thank Kathy for their time today and everyone else that's on the call. Again, you can contact Kathy and Jim directly. If you didn't happen to catch their email addresses, you can always contact me by phone or by email. I know you've all got my contact information. I'd be more than happy to answer any other questions that you have after we get off the call. And hope everyone has a great weekend.
Great. Good luck to everyone.
Yeah. Good luck. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.